Okay, I'd like to call to order the meeting of the Finance Administration Operations Committee meeting. Will you please take the roll?
Okay. Committee Chair, Director Peterson.
Here.
Director Banks. Director Gonzalez.
Here.
Director Sweeney.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Any public comments? Okay, there being no public approval of the minutes of the Finance Administration Operations Committee.
Motion made.
Second. Any discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are approved. Item number five, finance. Bond financing team presentation. Mike Colch is going to give us a presentation on our bond financing overview today for this year.
Thank you.
Yeah, let's, if we could, we'll just briefly go ahead, Mike. We'll just briefly go over, Mike will talk briefly go over the work plan for the committee. We're just doing that every time we have some of these strategic discussions so that we can kind of keep track of what items we're kind of checking off our list. Bond financing, this is part of the bond financing discussion. Mike, do you want to go over, Mike Stone,
sure.
Do you want to quickly go over the work plan as we discussed, I think, last time?
On your agenda, if you click on the work plan, you will pull up the FAO committee work plan. You will see that it's similar to what we discussed last time, though it's been updated for our discussions. Yeah, if you click there, pull it up. Importantly, we talked about that some of the topics that we would have on slide two show that we will be having discussions of certain topics in both the near and intermediate time frames, two of which we're going to discuss today. One on bond financing, which Mike Kalsch will present to us today, as well as procurement streamlining and the processes there, which John Donato will highlight for us today. Both of those presentations are one of at least two or perhaps many that we will have on these topics. And other than that, as we complete each of these tasks, we will be checking them off and noting that we've made progress as we make progress. So, Mike?
Okay, thank you. Good morning, directors.
Morning.
As Christy mentioned, we want to briefly go over some aspects of our bond financing plan for 2012. If you recall, from earlier this year during the budget process, we had included an expectation in the budget that we would issue about $200 million of bonds sometime in mid-year. That amount, I think we acknowledged, was flexible in that if market conditions were favorable, we would and may have the opportunity to increase the size of that bond issue depending upon whether or not we think we are able to achieve attractive interest rates. Toward that end, we're developing a bond financing team. We're marketing of services as the underwriter for on a variable rate bond transaction, bond counsel, liquidity banks, which are banks that support our variable rate issues that we currently have outstanding, bond insurers, trustees, a trustee. The team members on the left are the team members that we are now embarking upon procuring those services. The team members on the right are entities that we already have under contract that help support our existing debt. So let's talk a little bit about the team members on the left-hand side of the page. The financial advisors, they will advise when we get to the point of undertaking the transaction. The underwriters are the banks that actually purchase the bonds from the tollway, market, resell, and price the bonds, both a financial advisor and an underwriter. A firm that is currently in one of those roles or in one of those pools, if they wish to switch to the other pool, must undergo a period of 1 year of ineligibility. And this is to prevent any even appearance that an advisor would somehow be influencing an underwriting transaction, or an underwriter somehow influencing by switching roles midstream. We would establish under this RFP two pools for underwriters, a senior managing underwriter pool. This would be a more limited group of probably about 6 to 8 firms, and they would serve as in the lead capacity. They would be the firm that would be taking the orders for the bonds, running the books, managing the underwriting team, and serving as the main liaison with the advisors and with the tollway with respect to pricing and marketing the bonds. Yes.
Should we pick the banks then on that, on the senior managing underwriting pool, the co-managing underwriting pool? We'll pick the banks.
We would, during the evaluation process, we will select the firms that would be eligible for the pool based upon scoring, the high score of those firms. And then we would establish a process during the RFP. We would lay out the process by which firms would be selected from those pools.
And as far as the pool, you say 4 to 5 firms in the pool to get a better yield curve on that, to get more competition, or how would that work?
Yeah, we would want to establish a pool of probably up to as many as, but not more than about 8 firms.
Okay.
We do want diversity in terms of service and marketability. We want broad coverage of the market, but we don't want to have a pool that's so large that we can't involve the firms during the course of the RFP, the term of the RFP.
But 8, that's for senior.
For senior.
And then there would be, for co-managing, there would be larger number,
right,
potentially.
The co-manager underwriter pool could be in the neighborhood of 20 firms.
Okay. And with those firms, as far as diversity, then will we have any goals for diversity, or how will that work?
We will have goals in terms of diversity. We'll work with Gustavo and his group in terms of establishing the appropriate goals. In the past, we've been able to achieve as much as 25% or more, actually, in terms of participation by MBE, WBE, DBE firms. It's typically accomplished, and I think the firms would prefer this, through direct contracting with respect to those that would be qualified under the senior managing pool.
So it's primes, basically.
With primes, and then obviously co's are subs to the primes, so that, as opposed to having them joint venture or subcontract directly with the senior.
Question on the bonds. Can we go out 30 years on the bonds, or how far can we go out?
25 years.
25 years
is the maximum maturity.
Yeah, try to pursue longer terms. So it is something that is still on change.
We will also, on or about the same time, be seeking to procure legal services related to bonds in the capital program. We tend to fall into 3 categories: bond counsel, which assists with the development and preparation of the documents, and act really as counsel with respect to representing not only the tollway on certain aspects of the transaction, but primarily the bondholder, ensuring that the deal is conducted in an appropriate fashion relative to the bondholder interests.
Is the counsel selected by the Attorney General?
As we mentioned, I think on the bottom, Attorney General does appoint these firms as special assistant Attorney General, so they would really provide the final approval or appointment of the legal services. But our legal office does coordinate the issuance of the RFP to receive responses for these services. Issuers Council more directly works for the tollway, not only with respect to the actual execution of the transaction, but ongoing requirements to disclose financial information to the investment community. And underwriters counsel is a pool of firms that's typically qualified by the tollway, but works for the underwriter. So, with respect to the time frame, you can see on the bottom first, we would develop credit materials and go to the bond rating agencies to receive sign off on the credit standing of the issue. We would then market, price, and sell the bonds, and close the bonds, transfer the money to the trustee, and invest the bond proceeds until the time we need to spend it on projects. This whole time frame should take 90 days or less. That's why we're really looking at a time frame of at least 60, as much as 90 days after the team is selected. That's why we're looking at a mid-year transaction. We really don't think that the construction program will be ramped up to the point of needing bond proceeds until mid-year.
But it is time to refresh our pool because we've had the same ones in place now since 2008, I believe, or 2006.
I think it's different years for the financial advisor. I think it's
okay.
2009 for the underwriters and 2008, I think.
Okay.
At the November and December meeting, I thought that we had extended those extensions for those financial advisors, but I can't remember whether it was 6 months or a year.
We did provide an extension up to 1 year, but I think at the time we did mention that we wanted to go out and do a new RFP, develop a team for the new Move Illinois program, that we had put that team in place for the CRP a few years ago. But we did want to have access to those services in case we need to move more quickly.
Do you expect any challenges with our issue, or do you think it will be received well in the marketplace?
I believe it will be received very well in the marketplace, yes. I think we have a good story to tell. Our program and our creditworthiness.
So our hope today was to discuss, because we are going out with an RFP, any priorities or questions that you like to raise, priorities you'd like to see us focus on in that RFP process as we go out. And then we will be coming back, as you saw, that this conversation is one that will continue. Obviously we'll come back once the RFP is concluded with the procurement, but we also want to come back and talk through just the general strategy of how we're approaching these bond issues. And how much we're issuing at any given time. I think we had put together a plan last year when we were evaluating the Move Illinois program, but market conditions may be such that maybe it makes more sense to borrow more now if interest rates are low, or not borrow as much if interest rates aren't as favorable, whatever the case may be. So we definitely want to come back with that part of the conversation as well.
Who actually makes up the selection committee that selects the financial advisors and underwriters when the RFQs are cut off?
Typically, it would be that the final determination has been made. Typically, it would be two or three members from the finance department of the tollway, a member from another department. It could be from engineering department. And we've thought about or looked into the possibility of getting the Government Finance Officers Association to appoint a member to participate as well. So
we have the RFQ. Thank you.
Any other questions regarding the bond financing? Thanks, Mike. Moving to procurement, John Donato is going to give a presentation on streamlining of the procurement process.
So just as a little bit of background, as all of you may recall, we've talked a little bit about the extensive process that the tollway and other public and state agencies have to go through for procurement. There were some procurement reforms within the last couple of years that have added additional steps to the process. So we've really tried to take a step back, evaluate the entire process that the tollway goes through for different types of solicitations, and really look at opportunities to streamline the process. And we think that those opportunities kind of fall within three buckets, and John is going to go over those. But, you know, generally, it's just internal changes to our own process that we have control over, changes that we might be able to look for, you know, streamlining from, you know, CMS or OMB or the outside entities that are involved with the procurement process. And then some are just statutory relief, and there are various statutes and bills moving through the General Assembly even now, talking about, you know, tweaking and updating the procurement process to make it a little bit more efficient. Those reforms were passed a couple of years ago. They've now had a couple of years to be implemented, and we can see the effects of them, and there may be some ways to improve maintaining that transparency, but, you know, maybe not creating the burden on vendors that in some cases has been, I think, unwittingly created. So this is really phase one of the presentation. We'll be coming back with other ideas, but what we're hoping to do is, you know, go over with you so that you're aware of some of our internal reforms. We have been working with members of the General Assembly to talk about and introduce a bill for some statutory reforms or revisions. And then at the end, we're hoping to get some discussion going with you and members of the committee on there might be some action, additional action we can take that would require the board to change some, you know, policies, but that we also think could help drive toward, you know, some faster procurements. We're seeing that the typical procurement for the tollway now takes 3 to 6 months longer than it did just a couple of years ago. So, you know, clearly it's something that we need to address to make sure that all of our program stays on course. So.
Thank you, Christy.
I hope I didn't just give your presentation.
I should just sit down right now. All right. Good morning, directors. And as Christy alluded to just a minute ago, as all of you are aware, you know, the procurement process is lengthy and it takes time. Christy had tasked procurement to identify opportunities to streamline this process, and I'd like to briefly discuss this effort. This step is phase one of two phases of recommendations that will be presented to you. So as far as about the background, Senate Bill 51 was effective July 1st of 2010. And as you may recall, this major procurement reform had taken place. Some of these changes include the procurement authority transferred from Central Management Services, CMS, to the Executive Ethics Commission, the EEC. The Procurement Policy Board now reviews and makes determinations on all vendor potential conflicts of interest. We receive and review financial disclosures from subcontractors with contracts greater than $25,000. Each of these new requirements lengthened the procurement time frame to get a contract executed and added significant staff time to each procurement. Okay, this is an organizational chart. This slide is something I presented. It should look familiar. I presented it back to the new director orientation, you know, a couple months ago. And this is just a quick visual presentation of all the entities involved in the procurement process. So here we are, it's totally right here. Again, we have the EEC, CMS, the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, and the Procurement Policy Board. I think there's enough players in the game right now. Too many. So with all the procurement reform that has passed, coupled with all the entities involved in the process, we have some challenges. We have additional layers of approval. In addition to CMS and the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, the EEC now reviews our procurements at multiple levels. Additional steps are in the process. For example, let me discuss the process for the potential conflicts of interest. You're going to love this one. Prior to Senate Bill 51 becoming effective, when vendors would disclose a potential conflict, the agency would submit that potential conflict to CMS Legal. They would do a brief review, send it up to the governor's office. They'd make the determination, send it right to the agency. It wasn't too bad. Well, after Senate Bill 51 became law, the process got a little more convoluted. What happens now when a vendor discloses a potential conflict, we have to send it to our SPO, who works for the Executive Ethics Commission's house in our agency. She reviews it, sends it to CMS Legal Counsel for their review. Then it's sent to Springfield to the chief procurement officer for the state, who works for the EEC. He then sends it to the procurement policy board. They review it, make the determination, and back around the horn it goes. That's very complex. It adds significant delays to the process, and, you know, quite frankly, it just adds to the length of time it's taken right now to get procurements executed. Another item is different requirements across chief procurement officers. For example, the Federal Highway Administration restricts IDOT from requiring a Board of Elections certificate for roadway construction and engineering procurements in which federal funds will be utilized. Well, you might say, well, what does that matter to us? Well, here's how it matters. We both have the same vendors. We have the same engineering firms, the same construction companies. And if IDOT is not accepting the certificate, and IDOT is the agency that pre-qualifies them, they don't think it's really required in our procurements. They don't understand the nuance with the federal funds. They just know it's not required by IDOT. So it causes confusion to our vendors. Move Illinois will significantly increase the number of tollway procurements over the next few years, putting a further toll on our existing resources and threatening to increase the delay being experienced today. As our chief engineer, Paul Kovacs, will tell you, project delays equals increased project costs. So here are some current procurement timelines that we are experiencing today. I am, and this is going to span in two slides. I'm not going to go over every single one of them. Invitations for bids, typical procurement is taking 188 days. The request for proposal process, which I'm going to really focus on here, typically takes 218 days to execute a contract, and that's from the cradle to the grave. So we have 218 days currently, and if all of our streamlining recommendations are adopted, this process could be shortened to 180 days. So I'm going to go through all this because these are just the typical timelines from some of our other procurement methods. So what's the purpose of our recommendations today? The purpose is to gain maximum efficiency in the process for both the tollway and its vendors, and to reduce the length of time to get a contract executed. These recommendations also allow us to maintain transparency and accountability that was a cornerstone of the procurement reform that was enacted. Statutory recommendations.
So this is where, you know, just going through these, once John is going to go over each of them, we've already started to pursue legislation in Springfield to try to accomplish these. And many of these recommendations overlap with, you know, recommendations that the Illinois Chamber of Commerce is making, for instance, or others are making. If for some reason there are any questions or issues that come up, you know, it is not uncommon to pursue amendments to legislation once it's introduced, but just because of the time frame, we needed to get legislation going in Springfield to try to accomplish some of these. So, but you know, that shouldn't stop us. If there are issues that you know, think need to be raised, we can certainly address those. Sorry, John. Go ahead.
Thank you. Okay, so some of the most significant recommendations, as Christy alluded to, relate to the need for statutory changes to provide relief to some of the challenges mentioned earlier. Financial disclosures. We need to allow vendors to submit a previously submitted financial disclosure form with an affidavit essentially stating that nothing has changed since the last time they submitted the disclosure forms. Therefore, you know, it eliminates the repetitive submission of same information. So what happens is vendors, you know, when they have contracts, part of the process, they have to submit these financial disclosure forms, which they have to identify all the individuals that have either 5% or over $106,000 ownership interest in the company that submitted the bid. And we see a lot of vendors submitting proposals multiple times to us. So if they could just certify that the information hasn't changed through an affidavit, it would eliminate them preparing all these documents and staff from reviewing all of them.
Once the original disclosure form has been reviewed and approved,
correct.
So if there's not a change on the next submission or subsequent submission, they could just submit an affidavit and say there hasn't been a change. Everybody approved this once. And we don't have to go back kind of through that process.
That's correct.
Right.
Board of Election Certificate of Registration. We've been talking about this for months. This is not a surprise. And what we're saying here is to allow a 3-day cure period if the certificate is not submitted within a vendor's bid or proposal. In our most recent PSB, which was 11-4, nine firms were disqualified for not including that certificate within their bid. We really believe that we need some relief in this area, and there's been plenty of circumstances where in the past we've had to reject the lowest bid because they didn't submit the certificate, that piece of paper. They're registered with the Board of Elections, but they just didn't submit that piece of paper. And then what happens is we pay more. So I think that's a critical one. All these are critical. Previously disclosed potential conflicts of interest. I kind of talked through that whole process and how many people touch that, what a potential conflict is identified. And what we're saying is, similar to the financial disclosure one, allow vendors to submit prior cleared potential conflict determinations from the Procurement Policy Board with their bid if any of the potential conflicts haven't changed. So, for example, if we receive a bid from a vendor, vendor ABC, they have a potential conflict, it was cleared, the PPB made the determination to allow it, and then a subsequent bid, when they submit another statement, it has to go through that same long process. It adds unnecessary delay, especially if there hasn't been any changes. Lastly, Tier 1 subcontractors.
Sorry.
We want to align the tollway with IDOT to require disclosures and forms only from Tier 1 subcontractors on construction projects. Currently, we require these disclosure forms on all from all subcontractors in which the subcontract value is greater than $25,000. So this essentially is required in all sub of subs, as long as the value is greater than 25. Internal recommendations. These are some of the items that we can pursue internally that wouldn't require any external body to review or approve, things that we've looked at inside our own house in cleaning it up.
So some of the things that we're already going to be pursuing.
Correct.
But we want to make the board aware that we're pursuing them.
So user department training. Inform and train our user departments of all the information that's required to pass muster with all of the external entities that review our procurements. This leads to less back and forth, and it's more efficient. Buyer manual and training. Develop standard procedures for all of our procurement processes. One for CMS and one for the Executive Ethics Commission. And a lot of it's still evolving, so that's why, you know, we're just starting right now developing these manuals and training materials for all of our staff. Standardized templates. Create standard templates for consistency purposes across the agency. Therefore, when we are reviewing our own internal documents, we know exactly where to look for the information that we're looking for, and it's not sporadic, depending on the department that submits the request. Streamlining the contract signature process. We plan to consolidate two signature processes into one for contracts greater than $250,000. And the contracts that are greater than $250,000 are statutorily required to the executive director, the chief of finance, and the chief legal counsel's signature. And right now, those documents are going through departments twice to get signed, and you know, we're eliminating that step. We're just going to have it routed through those departments once. Make that more efficient. So those are two sets of recommendations that we have right now. And I think in the next phase two, we're going to expand upon some of those other recommendations that I think would require some board action. But it leads into the next slide on issues for discussion. And I'm sure all of you have experienced this already with this first item is CMS master contracts. Should all orders against CMS master contracts be presented to the board? You know, we do want your input and appreciate any discussion on this topic. For example, do we want to see all the routine commodity purchases that we have, like for copier paper, which I'm going to present in a little while, gravel, lubricants, oils? Any thoughts on any of that?
This is one where CMS, we say CMS master contracts, there are multiple state agencies that require these types of commodities. So CMS will issue a request for proposals or will issue solicitation, and you know, a vendor or a series of vendors will be selected. I don't want to...
No, you're right.
Correctly. And then all of the orders over that term for toilet paper towels, you know, oil, tires, whatever, will be ordered against those master contracts. And we can get better pricing by consolidating in that way. But we do think that the board spends a lot of time, both at its board meetings, just approving these standard purchases instead of talking about strategic items, frankly. But also, it can add time to our own process. So if we're ready to go and ready to purchase those snowplow tires on March 1st, but we don't have a board